Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. I'm joined tonight by an all-star lineup, Jen Swartman from Blind Tiger, Greg Dorosky from Greenport Harbor Brewing, Chris O'Leary from Brew York, New York, and Jeremy Cowan from Schmaltz Brewing, and a few other guests at the end. Well, it's December 4th, 2012. Can you believe it's December? We've been through a lot in New York, Hurricane Sandy, and we have some talk about relief tonight. Thanks to our sponsors, Great Brewers. But tonight we're still thinking about Sandy and relief efforts in New York. People are out there still working the Rockaways. You forget what's going on. A special event tonight is happening at Brooklyn Brewery. Jeremy Cowan's here. He's the president of the newly formed
Cowan.
He's New got York it right. City He's got Brewers it right. Guild. Tonight there's a great event called Drink for Good at Brooklyn Brewery, and many of us will be there. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Happy holidays.
Tell us about how you guys organized the relief event tonight.
Well, it was great. It was an opportunity for the New York City Brewers Guild, the newly formed New York City Brewers Guild, to put together a fundraiser. There's been so many good causes and so many people in need. And so actually the folks, Maya and Ben at Brooklyn Brewery, began the process and got the guild involved. And so we have almost all the breweries that have beer right now are pouring beer tonight at Brooklyn Brewery. We've invited a slew of friends from Dogfish and Smutty Nose and Lagunitas and some others. And tickets are $40. They're going to be available at the door at Brooklyn Brewery tonight. And the nice thing about this fundraiser is 100% of ticket sales goes to three different nonprofit organizations in the city, one for Red Hook, one for the Rockaways, and one for Coney Island.
Great. And when people listen to the show over the next few weeks, what's the best way for them to donate after the fact?
Definitely to hit our Facebook page, and they can also email us off the website. The organizations are listed in the press release that's on our website, and it's ongoing. There's not going to be any end to the need for people to get a little help over the holidays.
So one thing interesting about the New York City Brewers Guild, you guys formed, your members are New York City breweries.
Correct, yeah.
Some of whom have breweries and make their own beer, and some of whom contracted out to be made. And that's kind of the theme of the show tonight. That's why we have Greg from Greenport Harbor and Chris O'Leary from Brew York. We've been talking about this for a few months. Let's bring in Greg. Greg, you have something to say about it, and you had asked to host a show about contract brewing.
Well, back when we were, I guess, talking about Long Island craft beer and local craft beer in general, the issue kind of came up talking about contract brewing. And for me, I think it's time, particularly for New York and metro area craft brewing, to kind of talk about contract brewing and just as an industry and as a group of breweries and as consumers, craft beer enthusiasts, just kind of first talk about contract brewing and also just kind of come to terms with the benefits and the costs of it.
And Chris from Brew York, New York. Chris, what is contract brewing?
Well, this is where it gets tricky because some people have different perceptions of what contract brewing is. But in general, it's when you don't have your own brick and mortar brewery and someone else is doing your brewing for you. That's the hard, fast definition. Of course, we have other things like a gypsy brewing, which is more a bit more hands-on, perhaps. So I think that also gets thrown into the equation, but it gets tricky.
there are also situations where even a brewer who has their own brick and mortar, and they choose to, well, they, instead of being able to expand their brewery endlessly, they decide to utilize space but then go in a gypsy fashion, mm-hmm. where the brewer actually travels to that brewery and has figured out how to execute their recipes on that particular system. Because exactly. that is part of the transition that is made. It's not like these distinctions that we that we taste in a beer that we know, you know, how it was brewed in their home little brew pub and then how it tastes when it comes out of a contract situation. It's not because the contract brewers don't care or they're not trying or, you know, it's, you know, to scale these recipes up isn't as simple as just like just double it all and it all and it just gets bigger and it's miraculously the same.
Exactly. And it's a, it's an issue of it can be a financial reason. It can be a matter of space and meeting demand. There are situations when, you know, equipment is damaged and, you know, someone steps in and helps them brew at another facility. It's there are many, many reasons that it happens, and it's not necessarily just that it's, you know, just advantageous for them to do and easier for them to do it.
Right.
Let's let Jeremy take the floor.
Jeremy's got a great story.
It's only been 16 years of contract brewing. I'm not sure what I'm still talking about on any given moment, but about this topic, I have a bit of experience. And yeah, I mean, the basic idea that came out of the 80s, 90s, and more recently is that for folks who either didn't have the money or didn't either possibly, like me, have the expertise or any experience, but had an idea, some other people who just didn't want to invest in their own facility, whether that was for capital reasons or for trying to really scale up their concept quickly, you go to a place that has a little bit of extra capacity or a lot of extra capacity, and it could be a tiny brewery that has a 5-barrel system that you can brew on a couple days a week and buy your own little fermenter. That could be Gypsy Brewing, or you can have them do it for you, which is contract brewing. All the way up to somebody like Sam Adams, Pete's Wicked Ale Scale, where, you know, you're really taking advantage of these industrial breweries that had huge capacity from years past and can get you the kind of pricing that there's no chance that anybody at my scale could ever try to accomplish.
So when you guys set up the New York City Brewers Guild, what ground rules did you set up? I mean, there's some breweries in New York City. There's others that are breweries in name only.
Right. The nice thing, it was a great debate, discussion, really, in the very beginning, because there are a lot of brewers that were either just starting or who'd been in it for years, like myself and Harlem Brewing, and that we didn't have our own breweries. I actually qualified because my TTB permit for the world's smallest brewery at Coney Island, which unfortunately last month got washed away, but my license is still there, so I can technically be in the Brewers Guild. And so that was the rule, was you had to have your primary TTB license based in the city of New York. And the nice thing that we're going to do is we've opened it up so that breweries from the region and actually around the country can join the New York City Brewers Guild for a reduced cost and participate in our events, have their beers featured at festivals, participate in our marketing efforts. And so, you know, there are guilds around the country that have made a different direction for themselves, but we wanted to be as expansive and as inclusive as possible because it is tough. I mean, even the largest breweries that we all love in the city do a lot of contract brewing or gypsy brewing, depending on what your perspective is. And, you know, we're not in it for the debate. We're in it for celebrating great beer and making these small businesses grow and succeed and helping the retailers and the wholesalers through the channel have a good time and have
so
great
products.
So
let's focus on the beer you brought. This is, I like this beer. It's the Hot Mana.
Yep.
The Hebrew IPA.
That is our contract brewed World Beer Championship American IPA category gold medal winner this year. And it's the first permanent new item we've put out in 4 years. It's was intended to be a straight classic, but our take on American IPA. 6.5% alcohol, 65 IBUs.
You went through a few different recipes, as I recall, get to this final product,
yeah,
right?
What was
the sequence on that?
People ask us if we do test batches and have a pilot system all the time, and we actually don't. Until the world's smallest brewery, which was only 1 gallon at a time, the smallest batch we'd ever done was 100 barrels of beer, which is a lot of beer, 1,400 cases. So Paul Mackerlane has been my brewer, my master brewer, since 2003.
Yeah, he really, the thing with Jeremy's contract situation is that he was really met with serendipity, meeting Paul, who came with the facility, as I recall, right?
Absolutely.
And took a liking to you, I'm sure, and also appreciated your concept and the fact that now he had a chance to really flex his creative muscle and his skill set, because I don't think you would have been able to execute some of the crazy stuff you've pulled off?
You know, considering I never was a brewer and I can't cook for myself, I think that's probably a fair way to think about
it. So Paul really is a brewmaster, and you really lucked out.
Oh my God, I say it every day, all the time. I count my blessings because I come to him with an idea. Like this IPA was not the craziest recipe we do for sure. But the idea was to make our mark on a category that, as we all know, fastest growing, most prestigious category of beer right now.
And one that you hadn't tapped into either.
And it's strange that for a craft ale company, we never had a regular old IPA. And so we definitely did not want to mess that up. And so we did 4 test batches last year, again, all 100 barrels each. So it's a lot of beer. And we just kept changing the malt profile, changing the hop profile. Paul and I would taste them together, but actually this was the first time I got the entire Schmaltz Brewing tribe involved, and our whole company sat around and we tasted all of the lovely IPAs from the West Coast, from San Diego, from the East Coast and the Midwest, and decided what direction we wanted to take the malt profile, the hop profile.
So, Jeremy, by all means, then you're a brewer, you own a brewing brand, but you just don't own actual brewery.
I mean, I am totally comfortable because this debate makes certain people actually pretty emotional and other people couldn't care less. I'm totally comfortable with whatever somebody wants to feel about it because every morning I have to wake up and schlep in the beer world anyway. So we got to go sell more beer, and I love the creative side. And I love the flavors that we're able to come up with, and I love the fact that I can be I used to describe myself as the English major behind the brewmaster, and I come up with, hey man, wouldn't it be cool if we did 16 different malts and 16 different hops and added 16 different additions over a 256 minute boil, and it's 16% alcohol, and it sits before us on the table. It was 14-hour brew days for the brewers at Old Saratoga, who, if you think about contract brewing, a 14-hour brew day and a 256-minute boil, no way.
That's some dedication in contract.
It's unbelievable what they're willing to do for us and what they're able to create.
Well, this beer is great. You know, it's great. It's nice and citrusy. You know, there's a nice malt backbone to it. And when Jimmy and I started talking about discussing contract brewing, it wasn't necessarily to say that contract brewed beer is bad or that beer brewed in a brewery that brews all their own beer is better. It's just to kind of bring that discussion out and kind of...
I think honesty is a really big factor absolutely. In this. And the problem I have had over the years are with breweries that really try to sweep it under the rug, ignore it, and lie about it.
Yeah.
And I won't name names, but it has annoyed me no end.
Absolutely.
And if they, you know, I think that it's fair enough to say, hey, we had no idea we were going to be as successful as we are when we built our little facility. If we had had any idea that this market was going to do what it's doing, maybe we would have built a different, you know, been able to make more of our beer in our home territory. But we can't afford to just expand in a city like New York City and take on square footage, you know. So there's a reason, and that's okay. But just be honest with your consumer base so everybody knows what the deal is, and then people won't feel duped.
And I think for me that's a really big issue, that honesty, because I do feel like there's some disingenuous marketing that's going on, if only by omission. And
exactly.
You know, not to call particular breweries out, because this isn't about, you know, a witch hunt. It's also about expressing, you know, I am a brewer and, you know, it's something that I love. And as a brewer, for me, it's kind of a twofold issue, the contract brewing thing, that ultimately gets me to the point where I think transparency is important. For me, the emotional issue is that I feel like contract brewing kind of almost cheapens what I do every day. You know, I'm the guy who's in the brewery for the 14-hour brew day brewing beer, and that's something that I love to do. It's something that I've devoted my life to doing, and I do think that is a little bit different than a beer. The beer that comes out of our brewery is a little bit different. Not better, it's just different than beer that comes out of a contract setting. You know, there's kind of a more philosophical issue that I think also warrants consideration. By moving production of the beer outside of the brewery, I think, you know, you move the brewer out of the brewery, the contract brewery. You move the production process out, and it's almost like you have a recipe in the beginning and then the beer at the end. And that process in the middle is what makes us as a craft product unique.
It's Greg, let me jump in. Greg, shoot. So at Greenport Harbor Brewing, you're on the east end of Long Island.
Yep.
What size barrel system do you have?
We have a 15-barrel brew house, 5 30-barrel fermenters, and actually we just...
And when you want to make new beers, do you do it on the big system or do you?
Do it on the same thing. It's a big system. We have about a 1,200 square foot production space. We're moving stuff in at the beginning of the day, moving it out in the beginning of the day, moving it back in at the end.
So what do you feel like room. Because you have that your own small brewery that you're more flexible about making new beers or
it's more
experimenting?
Hands-on.
Yeah. Yeah, I think all of us have a very kind of intimate connection to the ingredients we use and also the process. And, it's just different. You know, we do have very much the same process of putting together a recipe, of sitting down and taking great beers that we like and discussing them and kind of theoretically putting together a recipe and refining it over time on the system.
So at the end of the day, there's a lot of factors involved, including the care that goes into making the beer.
Absolutely.
And the recipe and everything. But what beer did you bring?
Okay, so I brought our winter seasonal antifreeze. It's an English old ale.
Awesome. I love this style.
This is great.
This is one of the best things about winter beers, man. Yeah. It's just it's the best time to drink it and the best time to enjoy it.
So the Greenport Harbor antifreeze.
60 degrees outside today.
So. Yeah, no,
yeah, in New York.
And that's even better for a California boy.
Yeah. Exactly.
As we drink the antifreeze from Greenport Harbor, we'll take a short break. We'll be back in a few moments on Beer Sessions Radio.
This song's called Off My Mind by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Now, that's my kind of song. That was a really great little number. I love it. And I'll say this. You should be a member of Heritage Radio Network. It keeps everything going. We've got a great studio here out at Roberta's in Bushwick. And there's an engineer and a executive producer and a director. And we're reaching people from England to California. And I'm really proud to be part of the Heritage Radio Network. So check us out, heritageradionetwork.org, and become a member. I'm a member. I think I'm member number 55 or something. I think I'm actually member number one, which is what I should be. And that's cool. You know, we've been talking about a lot of things. The sub-message here, it's still in New York. It's Sandy Relief. There's a great event at Brooklyn Brewery tonight, which is kind of one of the first big events that New York City Brewers Guild will do. And New York City Beer Week is coming up in February, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So, Jeremy, give us the scoop on that, because we've already got tickets for our New York City Brewers Choice Up.
Yes, and it's there's been a lot of questions, and so it's a good opportunity to straighten a few things out. We had a launch party in May when we started the Guild, and we took over the Guild, the nonprofit organization that is the Guild. It's the 12 active members of the breweries in New York City, took over leadership of New York City Beer Week from Josh and Chris, who did an amazing job for four years of creating this thing from scratch and really shepherding it into this wonderful, wonderful event in New York City. So the Guild now is raising money. And also has signed a media contract with a sponsor, with the Village Voice, which we're really excited about. So the Beer Week, we moved the dates to the end of February, beginning of March, February 22nd to March 3rd. And we'll have, you know, hopefully 300-500 events in New York City featuring fantastic craft beer from breweries in the city, as well as breweries from all over the region, all over the country, all over the world. And the goal this year will be, in the past, we had the Passport, which was a fun way to go explore the city. This year, we're going to move away from the Passport towards just really featuring great events. It's going to be less about getting a buck or so off of a beer in a neighborhood and more about bringing out what's really special, doing things that are adding to the value of your experience of craft beer in New York City. And obviously, Brewer's Choice is an example of that that's going to be on Wednesday, right? Wednesday night?
Yeah, Wednesday, February 27th. You can go to goodbrewsteel.com or nycbrewerschoice.com for tickets. And what's the official site for the New York City Brewers Guild?
I think you nailed me on the website address, because it's either just Google New York City Beer Week. And I can't remember what we ended up with, NYC or New York City spelled out. It was a funny conversation over beers, of course, with the Guild. But the exciting part about it is we've moved into the middle of winter because retailers were a little concerned in September. They were already pretty busy. Things were kind of hectic. And this is an opportunity for retailers to get something special on the books, make a few extra bucks during a kind of quieter time in New York where there's a little less going on. It's also San Francisco Beer Week on the West Coast, the beginning of February. And that's always a big bash. And a lot of us head out there. And then we get people to come out for New York City Beer Week now. And so it's fun to have those two in parallel. And luckily, you get a week to sleep and rest and rehydrate.
Well, thanks for catching us up to speed. I know a lot of people asked about it. It's pretty bold to move the whole week. I know that it was established in New York in September. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great time.
Yeah, we'll have an opening night party that we're going to finalize details here pretty shortly. And then Brewer's Choice will be our marquee food and beer pairing event during the week. And then we'll have a closing hangout session that'll be a little bit more casual with, again, a selection of wonderful beers for anybody who can survive the week and make it to Sunday.
All right. Well, that's, you know, we're going to rest up for that one, I'll tell you. It's more than a week, too. It's like 10 days.
Yeah. But that's why we're in the beer business. We're survivors.
We like
professionals.
To party.
Professionals.
So we're drinking this crazy antifreeze, anti-freeze from
It's not
Green
poisonous,
Border.
Right?
It's strong.
Yeah. Well, it's 7.5% alcohol. Nice and malty. I think you get some nice dark fruit from it.
Definitely.
Maybe echoes of.
I can't believe no one took that name before. Yeah. I mean, I was like, that was such a no brainer.
Well,
for a Christmas beer,
I get antifreeze in my car.
Yeah, but this isn't blue.
It's not. Oh, this is beer. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and on air, do we have Dan Paquette on the air right now?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Dan. So, talking about contract brewing, gypsy brewing, and other things going on. So you've been a gypsy brewer in Massachusetts. We got Jeremy from Schmaltz. We got Greg from Greenport Harbor, Jen Swartman, and Chris O'Leary here. So how you doing?
Great. I'm doing fabulous, yeah, winding down 2012 and the brewing calendar, so that's good.
Well, you know we love your beers, and unfortunately we don't get to see enough of them in New York City.
True.
Yeah. So I want to join in the conversation. If anyone wants to ask Dan a question, you know, your gypsy brewer, you know, how does that fit into, you know, the world of brewing?
How did you get started and where?
Well, actually, it's funny. I heard you talking about Paul McElhaney a little while ago. And, you know, I got started professional brewing in 1992. And I think 93, I worked under Paul for about a year and a half.
That's awesome. Then, and I didn't even know that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really
that
cool.
It was up in Lowell, Massachusetts.
Sure.
He was a diamond in the rough back then. And I think it took him a few breweries to find his place. And I'm really happy where he is now and what he's up to. So, but yeah, I bounced around, went from breweries going out of business to the next brewery going out of business. Settled in one place for
you
5 years.
You were ahead
years.
Of your time.
Oh, the 90s.
Yeah.
And Dan, you were in my hometown too. He was at Haverhill Brewing. In Haverhill, Massachusetts.
I was. And I went. I worked in the north of England for a few years, and then we decided to move back to Boston. And I don't know if you know, but you know, there hasn't been a brewery opening here in about a decade. So there wasn't any real work for me. So my wife and I had $8,000, and we drew a label. And we asked a friend if we could use their brewery, and we made one batch of beer. And
was it Jack Door?
And it's kind of Jack Door, yeah. And it 4 years later, you know, that original investment, we never went out and found any other money, but that the profits from that went on to make, you know, allow us to make the second and the third. And, you know, we just brewed, we're at the 100 barrel size now, and I'm, you know, Martha's my assistant brewer, and we just brewed Jack Door 49. So
where are you guys?
We're pretty happy.
Dan, tell us a little bit about, since we're talking about contract brewing and all that, tell us what facility you're brewing out of and what's your relationship to that brewery?
We're brewing at a Buzzards Bay Brewery in Westport, Mass, down on the south coast, about an hour and a half south of Boston. Beautiful farm, kind of similar to Omegang in a lot of ways, in setting. And I've known Bill Russell. I used to buy, he's a winemaker. He has a really nice vineyard there. I used to buy wine barrels from him in the mid-90s to make sour beers and whatnot. So I kind of knew him. And when the opportunity came where they had a lot of space opening up in their brewery for someone to do something, it was good for us. We actually started another brewery. We use the term tenant brewer now because we don't really prance around the different markets and places. We're pretty much, Mark and I are driving down to Westport, you know, 2 to 3 times a week making beer.
So tenant brewery, that really makes sense. I've seen that happening with a lot of other people. So do you think that there are a number of breweries out there that have extra space so that other young brewers could come in and start their own line?
No.
Opposite.
No space.
That's the thing. I mean, I get emails every day. Hey, I want to do what you do. Well, I said, the first thing you have to do is find a brewery that makes really awful beer and they're not doing well. And they might.
Well, let me list them. We've got. Listen, I'm not off. I mean, Bronx Brewing is renting part of Cottrell's in Connecticut. Yeah. Chris, you know this.
Yeah.
Clown Shoes is something going on up in Ipswich, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Anchorage, which is this really hip brewery, is doing something at Midnight Sun in Alaska. So, there's some out there. Maybe those are the only ones I know.
What's kind of interesting is a lot of these gypsy brewing situations, I think, Dan, feel free to disagree, but sometimes the more widely known beer out of the brewery is actually the gypsy beer rather than the main brand that originated there.
Yeah, I mean that's probably true at Buzzards Bay right now.
Yeah, I mean Beer just got into Rhode Island, so
yeah. That's it. I mean, I think there was a particular time of just a few years ago, there was a bit of a lull, and we hit it at exactly the right moment. And you know, if Buzzards Bay decided, you know, hey, we're going to go for it again and do our own stuff, you know, Martha and I would be out, you know, would be without a home, really. I mean, I can't think of anyone else in within striking distance for us to go brew that would allow us in and allow us the space and the freedom that we have. So.
Yeah, it's especially hard right now. I mean, even in the 90s, there was a lot of opportunities for contract brewing on the East Coast in particular. Most of those breweries either got bought or disappeared and got sold for scrap. And in the 2000s, especially the later 2000s, as East Coast beer really came up and got its legs and started making flavors that were interesting and unique and could stand with the Midwest and the West Coast, that capacity disappeared. And so right now in Massachusetts, though, there are tons of breweries that popped up. I noticed at Extreme Beer Fest and at American Beer Fest in Boston, at a couple of facilities there at Paper City and at Mercury. And it does give people a chance to get started. I mean, I started with $2,000, and that only got me 100 cases of beer and 1,200 labels. It was 1996, so printing color labels was really expensive then. And we hand-bottled it and hand-labeled it, and I drove it around in my grandmother's car, which was not included in the budget. And, that's a way that a lot of people get started. And then, for me, it's kind of what you do with it. Contract brewing could be, to me, it can be one perspective, and I'm totally comfortable with all of them. It can be that certain people feel very proprietary about the walls and about the water and about the land underneath them. And other people, is a food truck versus a pop-up interesting restaurant that's kind of started happening these days versus a regular, brick-and-mortar restaurant, they'll all have their perspective. And to me, in brewing, it's about what the beer tastes like. But I'm also open to different perspectives.
Dan, one thing. So just to give us more perspective on what you're doing. So at the brewery Buzzards Bay, how big is that brewery and how much of it, or how, you know, give us a sense of what you're doing there and how much of the brewery you're using and time-wise and everything.
Okay, so right now in the brewery there, we've got four of the tanks are ours. The other one's empty, and it's going to be ours on Thursday because we're brewing a lager.
So that's the entire brewery? Five tanks?
I'm sorry?
How many tanks are in the brewery?
There's a total of six. There's a total of six.
So you're almost using the entire brewery right now?
Yeah, right now. You know, Buzzards Bay closes in January for various reasons. So we're trying to get a lot of beer in there to get us through. So when, you know, January 27th, when we walk in the door, we're back on track immediately. So we're brewing a lot. You know, like I said, it's a 50 barrel system. I brew twice in a day. It's about 13 hours with Martha. We can fit about 116 barrels of Jack Door into a tank. And, you know, that's how we do it. And, you know, we're somewhere over, I don't know, we're going to be somewhere around 4,400 knocked out barrels this year, Martha and me. So that's
pretty cool. So you're working
cool.
Like, the brewery, so then they come back and then they use their brewery more later in the winter?
You know, their time there, their season is really the summer. So in the summertime, they'll have a couple of tanks full. But, you know, I don't really know too much about their business, so I don't want to comment. I think they have a great lifestyle, and they make just enough beer to do what they want to do.
Do they have a pub, or do they distribute? I'm not familiar with Buzzards Bay, honestly.
They used to be widely distributed in New England, and they were an all lager brewery. Now they have a new brand. Again, I'm not really comfortable because I don't really know.
No, Dan, I was just really to see more about the experience of you guys going into an existing brewery and using some of their facilities. Hey, guess what? Stay on with us, Dan. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes, and you're on Beer Sessions Radio, okay?
All right.
This one's called Sweet Talk by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're at Roberta's in Bushwick, one of my favorite restaurants in New York. And thanks, Joe. I love hearing the music that you guys play here. Well, again, become a member. Go to heritageradionetwork.org. You can support all the shows. There's so many great shows, and I am so happy to be here. We've got a great crowd tonight. We're talking about contract brewing, tenant brewing, gypsy brewing, a little bit of the nitty-gritty nuts and bolts of actually making beer that so many of us like. Greg from Greenport Harbor, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I think what's really great about what Pretty Things is doing is that, Dan, you guys are really involved in the process. And it's very easy to focus on, you know, the quality of the beer. And even though that ranks really high with the consumer, I think particularly with a craft product, the process matters. And it's not just the product, it's the people, it's the place, it's everything involved with crafting this beer that's important. And I think you see some of the same stuff even within gypsy brewing or tenant brewing, where there's different expressions of it. You know, you see some self-described gypsy brewers who really are just giving recipes to other breweries to brew, and then something like you guys do, which is really you guys are just using their space and doing
as
everything
yourself.
Exactly. And it really is exactly like what we're doing, except you don't own the space.
Well, that's what I tell everybody. You know, I've worked in this business for 20 years, and I've never owned a brewery, but I've never, you know, had to prove that I was the brewer, because I was always in there wet and stuff like, you know, yeah. I was always the guy making the beer, even though I didn't own, and thank God I didn't, to be fair, because they're all out of business. But, you know, I'm doing exactly what I've been doing for a long time. The only difference is that I'm also out there sort of selling it now, too, you know.
Well, and that's not just a minor difference. I mean, I'll just play devil's advocate for the sake of it, because I actually don't have a chip on my shoulder about this. I've been called a lot of things, having a dancing rabbi and circus sideshow freaks on our labels for 16 years. But the thing about contract brewing, though, is there's a lot of things about being a beer company in addition to the production process. And so while I totally agree, I love the craft part of it, the people that are involved in it and the passion and the craftsmanship. That's why I went to such talented brewers to get my beer made. And I agree, in the 90s, if you saw a silly dancing frog flipping off somebody on a t-shirt and that was a mediocre golden ale or lager that was just packaged and had no thought put into the brewing process, that I could see as pushing people the wrong direction. But, you know, right now, contract brewing is more dynamic than ever, and a lot of people are able to do things that they never would be able to do, even if they owned their own brewery, because we're able to, you know, produce 100 barrels. We actually produced 450 barrels of this beer that we're drinking, Jubilation, and there's no chance. I mean, this beer took so long to make, and as the scale of making that beer, if we tried to make it on a 15-barrel system, we just never would make
it. Is this the new Jubilation?
Yeah, this is the Sweet 16, just came out this
month.
So
what's your strategy? Is that you feel like for the holidays, what brewers should make? Special beers, more expensive beers.
Well, that's what I loved about antifreeze is this time of the year. It's such a delicious style to be able to share with people. And so this one's, you know, it's 16 malts, 16 hops, 16% alcohol. And yes, Jimmy, there are dancing unicorns and cupcakes on the label this year.
All right. I love unicorns.
Hey, we have another guest on too. So Dan Puckett's on from Pretty Things, and John from Greenport. Are you on the line too?
John. I am.
Yeah, John.
The first question, I know you're the co-owner of Greenport Harbor, but what's your last name?
Leegee.
I only know you as John of Greenport Harbor.
Not John anymore. Harbor. Now you know.
Leegee.
Yeah. You know, for me, it's just kind of echoing on some of the conversation you guys are having, is where is the center of craft brewing? Where's the heart of it? And I get the effort, the, you know, investment, and to me, that is about getting involved in making that beer, because when you go out and start talking about your beer, that's where the conversation usually, like, lands. Like, just what did you do? What did you, you know, where did that happen? What, you know, how'd you come up with that? But there's so many, like, detailed questions, and that's the excitement. It's like food. It's like, you know, anything that you connect with in a passionate way, you want details, and I think that's where we're at. We're, you know, we're in the middle of an expansion year. We're getting into a bigger space. And people say, is that for scale? And we say, no, we're basically, as a small brewery, being forced into making some of our more popular styles. And we like to make a lot of different styles. So we need to expand in order to, you know, bring more varied beer to our, like, you know, portfolio. So I think there's so many different, like, issues there. And I think what, you know, Greg is talking about, what some of the guys in the room are talking about, is really just the transparency of this and what it means. Because, you know, I mean, we hit a heat wave in the summer where we flushed, I don't know, like 60 barrels of beer, Greg?
Yeah, yeah. And we like, dumped two batches down the drain.
That doesn't happen when you ship your beer out. You know, when it's being shipped somewhere else, that is something you undertake as a small
brewery. That actually does happen, unfortunately. So you're right. You're absolutely
not
right.
Not in every situation.
I mean, you don't usually take the exposure to it like that you would if you are sending a recipe. I'm not saying if you're up there as a gypsy brewer making it yourself and something goes haywire that you're not responsible. But there's fundamental differences between, I mean, there's two local breweries we have that are going to beat us to packaging, and they're a year old. And the only reason is because we won't, like, contract out our packaging. So it's just, for us, it's an important distinction for us. So,
John, one thing.
You know,
so
whether or not that holds forth.
So you guys are growing. John, you're growing. You have demand for some of your popular brands. Are there any other options for you, like, besides expanding?
Contracting. You know, I think that is an option. I mean, we could have been in packaging, you know, last year, a few years ago. We're happy to be expanding. I mean, listen, I'm not. There is no way I'm complaining about this because we feel very fortunate to, like, being able to grow and to bring more beer, you know, out from Greenport. But on the same token, we are leveraging ourselves to the hilt.
All right, we got a lot of people in this room, and they covered a lot of points on this issue. It's already over my head. So let's just get back to basics. Okay, everybody, including John and Dan, it can be your beer or someone else. I'm going to start with Dan, then John, then we'll go around the room. Tell us your favorite beer that you had this weekend. Dan.
Oh, boy, this weekend. I'm going to say my own because we were trapped in with a sick cat most of this weekend. Our finest regards. It's our winter offering. It sounds like it's a bit like antifreeze. It's an English inspired, very malty, 10.5% barley wine.
All right, John. And what was your favorite beer from the weekend?
You know,
I hope you drank beer, man.
Don't kick right now. We were at the at Spring Lounge and we were drinking this. Like, they had a chocolate mint thing, and I was like, this doesn't, what the hell is this? Like, it tasted like chocolate milk. I thought it was fantastic. So,
the Stone mint chocolate imperial stout.
Wow. Jen, what about
pretty
you?
Unique, so.
Well, we had VSK a week ago, but that wasn't the weekend. Over
That's
the weekend,
not fair.
Probably.
You can't talk about those beers.
But you can't count it. Yeah. So, Koonin's Double Rice IPA. An award-winning double IPA from them.
Jeremy?
I feel so guilty going because I have this giant 16% beer in front of me by saying that I really enjoyed the Thyme Pale. It's on cask at Eataly the other day. I brought some friends by. And then I just love Cartons, but what do they call it? Their boat
the
beer.
Boat, oh, yeah.
I call it a hoppy kulsh or whatever, but that's just a sweet,
I call it that too.
Delicious, drinkable beer.
But they don't like to put it in a category.
Yeah, it's all right. I believe in not believing in categories.
How about you, Jimmy?
Well, let's go to Greg. How about Greg?
I don't know. I know I had an Allagash Confluence this weekend, which I really liked. Also, I'll throw out two at the same event with John, the Smutty Baltic Porter.
Where'd you go, to Spring Lounge or Monk?
Yeah, Spring Lounge, Spring. The chili cook-off.
And who won this chili cook-off?
Empire, but just because they had a lack of appreciation of the sausage.
Because Empire,
they were really into elk and alligator.
Because Empire brought their own chef down and
We had the one-handed chili, though. Which was a sausage that I crafted in my kitchen, and John made a relish for it, and people just didn't get it. We're ahead of our time.
I miss this. Is a great, you know, this weekend in New York, we had so many cool beer events. Spite and Dival had something. Jimmy's Number 43 had something with Belgians. Mugs had their big Belgian events, but this event at Spring Lounge, the brewery reps make chili.
Yeah.
So who else? There was Lagunitas, right?
Yeah, it was Lagunitas, Empire, Omegang, Smutty. There were 12 different breweries there.
Wow, that's amazing.
So it's always good to hang out with everyone, you know. We kind of see each other in passing all the time, and it's good to kind of...
This New York City beer scene keeps growing, man.
Friendly competition over a lot of beer.
And Chris, what was your favorite beer from the weekend?
You know what? I had it when I was sitting right next to you, Jimmy. The Midnight Sun, the
Panty
inappropriately
peeler?
Named Panty Peeler. It was a pretty damn good American triple.
They're awesome Belgian triple.
American
yeah.
take on a triple.
And I had the Duranky XX. I had that. I love it. It's dry. It's hoppy. It's 6%. It tastes like it's stronger than that.
I love that beer.
Another great one. So what a weekend in beer in New York. I mean, I was just at Mugs today, and they still have all their Belgians on. It's crazy. In New York is just amazing. We're going to give a shout out to some people in the room. Talking about events again tonight, Brooklyn Brewery and New York City Brewers Guild. Everyone's still raising money for hurricane relief. We did an event right after the hurricane for our meat week. And Melissa Dane, she's paid $375 for a craft beer day with Jimmy. She's here today. Melissa, just say hello.
Hi.
And anyway, she's an awesome supporter, and her check went directly to Rockaway Beach LLC, care of Harry at the Brooklyn Kitchen, and that's what we were doing with that event. And Julie Barnard, you're a beer enthusiast. You've been on the show a lot. You've been out in the Rockaways almost every day.
I have been. I'm in the 20-plus days of volunteering for Sandy recovery efforts. Staten Island.
And you have an event that's sold out, but tell us about the event.
I do, actually. It just sold out. So it's next Saturday the 15th at CrossFit South Brooklyn. I've managed to rope in partnership with Danielle from Brooklyn Homebrew, 10 of the best homebrewers in New York. They're going to be pouring for us. It's 3 hours of homebrew and raffles and live auction. And I think it's going to be a really good time. Yeah.
And it sold out so fast that I couldn't even get tickets.
Do you know what? Actually, I'm starting to take a wait list.
Okay.
I'm actually starting to take a wait list on. So I will take your name before I go. But we chose two really, really great charities to work with. The Greybeards. Strictly, we're doing Rockaways. So the Greybeards and then the Rockaway Rescue Alliance. And they actually were given, I believe, Rockaway Tacos Kitchen for the time being to provide hot food.
That's great.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Jen, anything in closing or anything special you want to talk about?
Merry Christmas.
You're awesome.
Season. We're getting there. I'm thinking about shopping.
And Jeremy Deere, come on.
Hanukkah.
Let's
we
go.
Sorry. It's Hanukkah this weekend. Yeah. My God,
happy
people.
Happy Hanukkah, too.
Happy Hanukkah.
So much shopping left.
All right, Greg. And John and Dan, thanks for coming on. And I'll push one more time for New York City Beer Week. Tickets are on sale now for the New York City Brewers Choice. Go to NewYorkCityBrewersChoice.com. You will find some of the fine brewers in America there. Also with food. I love that event. It's awesome. And Scott Ficarro from Captain Lawrence is our keynote speaker.
Right,
which
on.
Is fun as hell.
We always talk about Brewer's Choice as one of our most favorite events. Mm-hmm. You know, even from the first year we did it, it was just awesome to see all of our kind of idols there pouring
it's
beer.
It's phenomenal because the brewers have to be there to participate.
Exactly.
And so that's one that people forget that. But it's a room full of the brewers who brew their beer. So you get to make contact with those people
already.
Directly.
Dave Yarrington from Smutty Nose, Bill Herlicker from White Birch, Scott Ricard from Captain Lawrence.
Et cetera.
We're going to have to just turn away some brewers. There's just too many brewers. But it's a night of brewers, not just their beers. And we try to make it what we think your night out in New York should be. And that's what we love about doing Beer Sessions Radio and the Good Beer Seal. I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal. You can follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at @beer_sessions. And I'll give a shout out again. Check out Heritage Radio Network. You're on it. You're listening to it. It's @Heritage_Radio. You can become a member too. Thanks to Greg, Chris, Jeremy, Julie, Jen, Dan, and John Leegee for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and our engineer, Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. Nation Beer Week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.